Thanks, Brian. Well, it gets progressively less formal, as Brian put it. I'm the bloke in a suit and tie who starts off with a formal bit. I'm really pleased to be able to be at this because, as Brian said, I don't know how much my role at the beginning was in getting C4CC underway, but certainly the conversations I had with Brian Tears about it and the way it developed is something I found incredibly exciting. And this event is therefore, I think, a really interesting one. It's a chance for everyone here, particularly those who don't know C4CC very well, to get a feel for what it's achieved since it was opened in 2010, to hear from the people who've been involved and to talk about some of the projects that in many ways define what C4CC is. It isn't the building, it's what goes on inside it. And it is a very special place that's exceeded all our expectations, as the metrics that Tears is going to display will, I think, show. More importantly, in many ways, it's excited a great deal of interest elsewhere. With our initial funder, Higher Education Funding Council for England, which really paid for most of it in its first couple of years. And internationally, I was recently in Shanghai and Hong Kong, and in both those places, talking to people about the creative economy. When I mentioned C4CC and described what happened, people got very interested, and I'll say something about my Shanghai conversations a little later. It is rooted, the conception of C4CC, which so many people here have actually made a reality, is rooted in a particular understanding of the creative economy and the kind of interactive open environment in which creativity happens. When the government talks about rebalancing the economy, and let's assume the government does mean it, I think Vince Cable, who I don't agree with on lots of things, but I think he does mean he wants to see the economy rebalanced. But what he means by that, and what many people mean by rebalancing the economy, is returning to manufacturing. And Cave has some quite bizarre notions as he wants the construction industry to become more active. It's a very old-fashioned conception of a manufacturing economy. The reasons why Britain's manufacturing economy has declined in the way in which, for example, Germany's has not are complex reasons. But we do know that a resurgent manufacturing economy can't be invented for this country. The future lies in exploiting something different, and that is, if we're going to reduce the dependence on the financial sector, and the coalition is totally divided on whether it wants to see the dependence on the financial sector reduced, but if we're going to reduce that, then it's from elsewhere in the service and knowledge economy that the rebalancing will come. That doesn't just mean the creative economy, but I think creative economy is an important part of the future. We have, as we know, one of the world's most important creative economies, certainly when expressed as a percentage of GDP. And its strength draws on many things, many aspects of UK education, culture, society, diversity, universities, and so on. But it's in many ways flourished in spite of government policy rather than because of it. Indeed, some aspects of government policy have got in the way of the creative economy. An approach to knowledge transfer that's based in a very specific science conception of what science and technology is, a conception that many people in science and technology don't think describes it properly either. And an obsession in government part with a narrow, very narrow definition of skills. And this is governments of all political hue over the last 10 years. I think on the skills issue, we're in danger of losing what I would call the distinctive UK graduate. That is somebody who's distinguished by questioning, by being imaginative, by reflective approach. Governments keep focusing on what and the skills that employers say they need today. But in fact, graduates in the creative economy thrive not because of some past definition of the skills that they were going to need, what employers said they needed 5 or 10 years ago, because what employers were saying 5, 10 years ago simply was not what was needed 5 or 10 years hence. No criticism of that. One can't predict what's going to be needed. What made people coming into the creative economy successful is the flexibility, the imagination, the scope for new ideas that they got from their education 5, 10 years ago, rather than the skills that they were narrowly given. The future of the knowledge and creative economy, I think, actually requires us to maintain that. Universities are educating people for jobs that haven't yet been invented. And in the creative economy especially, many people actually are inventing the jobs for themselves. And that's why I think the narrow conception of skills that keeps coming out is a very dangerous one for the whole economy. Now, the tendency for people, for policymakers, and many people in universities, is to have a very narrow conception of what knowledge is, which is really what my talk this morning is about. Narrow conception of knowledge to add to their narrow conception of skills. That knowledge is something that can be articulated in books, in articles, in patents. And one reason for that is that science and technology has come to define what research is, or rather a particular discourse about science and technology has come to define what research is, and therefore what knowledge is. And in 2006 it was, Ryan, that I gave the lecture to the Royal Society of Arts on knowledge and the creative economy, where I tried to set out a more nuanced vision of what knowledge was in the creative economy. The lecture turned out to be far more influential than I'd expected, and I think that I was in some ways giving shape to what other people were already thinking. T.S. Bryan and Neil have generously said that it was important for them in the shaping of these ideas as well. I hope that's why I've been asked to launch this event, rather than more prosaically, because I'm Vice Chancellor of the University of London, which CLCC belongs to. And I've been asked to talk about knowledge transfer and the creative disciplines, by which I mean all those disciplines that flow into the creative economy. Not just the creative and performing arts, media and design, important as those are, but also computing, psychology, material science, much else. The relationship between disciplines has never been more fluid and unpredictable than it is today, as encounters here in CCC have increasingly shown. My talk on the programme has been called a provocation. And what I've tried over recent years to be provocative about these issues, about how knowledge is shaped and innovation takes place in the creative economy. I intended to be provocative when I gave my Royal Society of Arts lecture. I tried to be provocative at an international workshop in La Jolla, California, about universities and industry. I've tried to be provocative when in government seminars on research and industry. But in all such gatherings, I argue that knowledge in the creative economy is very different, and somehow we need to accept that it's very different. And what troubles me is it's never quite provoked. That's one of my themes today is why my attempts to be provocative have actually failed. And people, it's not that people have not responded, but they've not responded in the aggressive way that I expected them to. Let me go back to the lecture I gave to the Royal Society of Arts 5 years ago, called, as Brian said, Knowledge Transfer Without Widgets, The Challenge of the Creative Economy, which was subsequently published as a pamphlet. Where did that talk come from? Well, partly from my own experience, my talking to lots of other people. The development of research capacity in the creative and performing arts disciplines in British universities it was, I think, one of the key elements in that, accelerated by the founding of the Arts and Humanities Research Board in 1998, which became a research council in 2005. I was actually chief executive of that from 2002 to 2005. That development of research capacity and creating and performing arts raised really important questions about the character of research in those disciplines. What is research and the generation of knowledge in the creative disciplines, where the research process is often carried out through creative practice rather than in advance of creative practice, where the principal products of research are not academic books or articles, but instead a performance, an installation, an exhibition, an animation, a design. We now know, I think, much better how new knowledge was expressed through artistic output and creative output itself, but how is it captured as part of a developing body of knowledge in a field? Something capable of being accessed and reconsidered by other people. Isn't that what research is in part meant to be about? Not something that comes into existence and then disappears. And that got me thinking about how knowledge was formed and shared in the creative disciplines. So back to the title of that lecture, Knowledge Transfer Without Widgets. How does knowledge transfer happen when there is no widget, no object, no specific new technology or process to transfer to a user? Because that's what characterises the creative disciplines, the creative economy. Knowledge is developed in quite different ways, with researchers and practitioners, universities and businesses engaging with each other in a collaborative and interactive process. One that often rests on the interaction of different art forms, engaging together, different disciplines, often driven by an engagement with digital technologies. If I'd longer this morning, I'd have given some examples of this, from Wayne McGregor's choreography using neuroscience to stimulate his ideas, and through to pervasive gaming. But in fact, I mean, you know, the very activities at C4CC provide plenty of examples of what I'm talking about. Knowledge in the creative economy is constituted as a dynamic, interactive, social phenomenon, rather than as precise innovations that can be fixed on paper or in physical form for others to access, acquire, and use. The knowledge that is distinctive to creative activity, I think, is made real not on paper, but in social interactions. Social interactions that are within value chains that reach outside the academic world. Actually, all business-facing research at some point linked out outside the academic world. But the point about creative knowledge is that its generation is not linear. Generate the knowledge, then move to the outside world, but actually dynamic and interactive. And that last statement is actually critical, I think, to my point on knowledge transfer and exchange. Knowledge in the creative economy is not formed separately in the university and then transmitted to others. Instead, the new knowledge develops within the interaction itself, and it's that engagement that is itself the source of the commercial and cultural value of what is produced. When the new knowledge has been created, it actually has already been transferred. Transferred within the process of its creation by people working together. And that's what's very hard to grasp, and also very hard actually to pin down, to attach value to attach property rights to. It means there are difficult questions associated with all that, as you well know. We all know the importance of networks within the creative economy to deliver projects. But let's go further. I think that new knowledge is itself networked. It comes from the encounter of people with different specialist skills, different talents and imaginations, and often different goals in the engagement itself. The term creative conversations is often used to describe these processes, and there are interesting implications to this metaphor of the conversation. In the most digitally driven of fields, exciting breakthroughs generally come when people shape ideas face to face, somewhere like this or in other places. And the most successful of these creative conversations are sustained over time, in what we might call an exchange of difference, encounters of different art forms, different technologies, cultures, disciplines, and that together they produce some of those exciting new knowledge in the creative sectors. And it produces them when people are working together. Surely that's one of the great drivers of this Centre for Creative Collaboration, a place in which people can encounter each other and develop new ideas together. And when governments seek to facilitate knowledge transfer for the creative industries, is supporting spaces for these creative conversations is one place where they might begin. Now, we know that networks are fundamental to the creative economy. Networks of micro and small businesses, often linked to practitioners and to researchers in universities. And there are many reasons why networks are so important. A key one is the way knowledge is constituted, developed, and transmitted, often in cross-disciplinary and cross-sectoral interactions. The business model of the creative industries, in other words, is shaped by the character of its knowledge and how that knowledge is developed. Interactions between people is the key to the relationship between new ideas and creative industry businesses. And one result is clusters of creative practitioners and micro-businesses. In Shanghai recently, I saw attempts artificially to create such clusters. And in Britain, we can see artificial attempts to create such clusters by town governments. The media centre in Huddersfield or the cultural quarter in Sheffield. But far more commonly, there are unplanned clusters in Hoxton and Shoreditch and Deptford and so on. It seems that in saying all of this, in my lecture in 2006 and in discussions afterwards, I wasn't being that provocative. It seemed to chime with people's own experiences of creative engagements. But a couple of years ago, I was invited to speak at a seminar in La Jolla, Southern California, a seminar that emerged from a research project on the relations between industry and universities, in all disciplines, indeed, mostly focused on science and technology. I've been invited to La Jolla because of what I've been saying on knowledge in the creative economy. And so I set off for California in a provocative, even for me, belligerent mood, ready to argue for the very distinctive way in which knowledge was constructed in the creative industries. I assumed that the 35 specialists there at that seminar, specialists in industry university relations, mostly involved with science and technology, would not understand, because their world was a world, after all, of the patenting and transfer of widgets. By the time I explained my thinking at the conference and in my talk, I realised I was pushing at an opening door. They heard my analysis of the creative economy as something that illuminated their own experience rather than contradicted it. Practitioners in knowledge transfer in from Science and Technology spoke of things that I'd stressed for the creative industries. Universities' role in providing public spaces for networking, for example, the facilitation of interactions, entrepreneurial centres, and so on. In other words, what they were interested in was not transferring knowledge about the latest widget, but forming a people-based environment in which knowledge could develop. And these are specialists in science and technology relations to industry. They spoke of the need for people to come together in what they called innovation ecosystems. And that university business offices had to realise that if you want to destroy an ecosystem, you try to manage it. Now, discussions in La Jolla insisted on the university as a site for interactions between people, people from across its disciplines and the business world, people who were working together to define problems in new ways and to find new approaches to thinking about them. This sounded a lot more like the creative economy than I'd expected when I set off. And I found a similar approach in this country when I went to, when whatever the government department was at the time, a succession of government departments responsible for industry, organised small meetings, bringing together people from universities and from industry and little seminars. I remember one particular one organised, I think it's under this government, 20 people around the table, and when I started talking about this, the business office people from universities didn't get it. The people from science and technology-driven industry did get it entirely and said, that's what we want. We don't want to wait for the new knowledge to be developed. We want to be in there, doing it with people. In other words, that ideas and knowledge develop out of relationships between people is something that, it turns out, was much more widespread, even if we think it's particular to the creative economy. Often bringing together the disruptive potential of different disciplines, different questions, different business structures. Now, I'm not claiming that the creative sector is just like all others as far as knowledge transfer is concerned. Though I do think that if you get away from the very small set of industries that are driven by lab-based scientific research, pharmaceuticals, biotechnology, aerospace, you'd find a great deal more similarity than one might expect. But what is needed in the creative industries is not a system to transfer from one organisation to another some knowledge that has already been produced. Rather, what's needed is to create spaces in which something new can happen and can be produced. And to repeat the important point I made before about the creative industries, once it has happened, it's often already been transferred. The difference from science and technology remains important, I think, but it's not as different as I once thought. But those differences do challenge government thinking on research and industry, and challenge it even more emphatically than other industrial sectors do. For a decade or more, many of us have battled against the conventional thinking, dominated as it is by linear conceptions of the transfer of knowledge by publication, by patent, by knowledge being formed by researchers and only then transferred to industry. Above all, an obsession with technology as the driver that belies the reality of a world where it's creativity that drives the technology, not the other way around. That's something that no government ever seems to understand, because technology seems an easy solution to economic problems. So, the creative industries are exciting, government policy towards it depressing. Many of us have been saying that for years, and it's depressing that each time one thinks government may have got it, they slip back again into the old thinking. Nonetheless, all is not gloom. There are new initiatives building on the reality that I've spoken about here, but developing outside government knowledge transfer thinking. One, of course, is where we're sitting, in the Centre for Creative Collaboration. I don't need to explain more because most of you know it, and for those of you who don't know it well, today is actually about understanding what goes on here. But I will underline the interest elsewhere, where there's a sense that we're very much ahead of the curve here in C4CC. I was in Shanghai giving a talk to the Shanghai Theatre Academy about some of these ideas, in fact. And the interest there in C4CC, which I only gave a short paragraph to in my talk, I wasn't there to glorify my own institution. The interest was striking. The Shanghai Theatre Academy had already decided it wanted to allocate space to something to bring together people from outside the academy, inside the academy, in interactive space. Something like this. And they were very taken by the thinking of C4CC when I explained it to them, and I actually had lunch with the director, who was very keen to talk about these ideas. What attracted them in Shanghai was the interactive space where serendipity might hold sway. I was amazed that the translator used serendipity. What do you mean I might not know serendipity? He said, I said serendipitous. She said, you mean as in serendipity? I said, yeah. The translation was very good. Interactive space where serendipity might hold sway, and a neutral space where external people could engage freely with each other in a way they couldn't in their own spaces. And this surely relates to one of the key dimensions of the creative economy, the need to rethink what we mean by the ownership of ideas. And that isn't easy, as we all know. And then that's C4CC. Then there are two other projects seeking to understand the realities of the urban creative economy, the ways in which urban economies, urban space, and people link distinctively in the creative industries. One is the Arts and Humanities Research Council funded project at the Universities of Brighton and Sussex to understand just how the creative cluster developed and works in Brighton, and what forces operate to constrain its development. And there's another much bigger project now building for London of a not dissimilar kind, led by the Council for Industry and Higher Education and Work Foundation, with C4CC and Queen Mary University of London involved in the discussions. That's not only to understand the creative clusters in London's economy, but also to shape practice through funding to respond to them. That project has not yet got its funding, but we're hopeful that it will. Now, both of those, the Brighton and the London one, are responses based on the kind of approaches I've been discussing. And so too are the Arts and Humanities Research Council's knowledge exchange hubs for the creative industries. The goal of the hubs, each with its own distinct mission and four-year, quite substantial funding, is to recognise research as fundamental to the success of Britain's creative economy, and the challenge of connecting in sectors where small-scale enterprise dominates. The importance of interaction, cross-disciplinary, cross-disciplinarity, and sharing new ideas is central to these AHRC hubs. And the location of all of that activity in quite specific urban locations. Now, the AHRC recognised the need to facilitate the networks that underpinned innovation and to create an environment that didn't try to force the creative industries to behave as if they were traditional large-scale industry. Each of the four hubs in Dundee, Bristol, Lancaster and London has a distinct focus. The one led by Queen Mary in London is called Creative Works and engages many creative higher education institutions and major cultural institutions, museums, galleries, concert halls and so on, in something that's really important, which is that you can't have a successful creative economy without a vibrant, broader cultural and arts environment. The two have to go together, even if governments simply don't normally recognise that. And Creative Works is going to try to connect all of that to the world of small enterprise, and we hope that C4CC will be playing a role in that. So there are many hopeful policy developments outside government, though not always without government funding, but outside government, and that gives me hope that actually there's real understanding now of the distinctiveness of knowledge in the creative economy. Well, in our last few minutes, let me just raise the issue of the newness of all of this. What I've discussed today is incredibly new, isn't it? I've talked about the distinctive way knowledge is constituted and transmitted in the creative industries. I stress personal interactions, networks, cross-disciplinary engagement, small enterprises in concentrated urban space. I stress the importance of new ideas as part of all of this, and it's all terribly new, isn't it? Well, as a historian, I've been struck by very interesting historical parallels. If we're looking for knowledge engagement between researchers and business through personal interaction, sociability and networks, then we can find it in the coffee house culture of 18th century England, or in organisations such as the Lunar Society of Birmingham in the 18th century. They were fundamentally part of the European Enlightenment. In provincial societies and in London's coffee houses, amateur scientists, gentlemen manufacturers, professionals, thinkers would meet regularly to explore the excitement of ideas in an enthusiastic environment of openness and sharing. And it's a culture that didn't separate the science from literature and the arts. And new ideas spread through these networks and intellectual communities. The century that followed, from the 1830s through to maybe the Second World War, was a period of large-scale industry and more formal relations between knowledge and production. That, I think, may have been the exception rather than the rule. Today's creative and knowledge economy may not be without parallels. Interaction, sharing of ideas, ranging across disciplines, all characterised the excitement of new ideas in 18th century Britain. And there's another historical parallel. If we're looking for dense networks of small enterprises, clustered together in urban neighbourhoods, Following a business model in which specialist skills are provided by individual enterprises, working together, networking with each other to create the product, rather than by a single concentrated production unit. Then we'll find them in the gun-making and jewellery quarters of 18th and 19th century Birmingham, where a host of independent skilled workshops, 50 different specialist skills, were involved in the making of a gun, 18th and 19th century Birmingham, each one done by a specialist independent workshop. Host of independent skilled workshops, each specialising in one part of the process, formed intensive networks of practitioners. In the cutlery quarter of 18th and 19th century Sheffield, you see the same thing, neighbourhoods of networked production, which is, by the way, now the site of the city's cultural quarter, where the creative industries are developing. And the dynamic part of London's creative economy has grown up in Clerkenwell, which was 150 years ago, where hundreds of small watchmaking enterprises formed dense networks of specialists, each contributing just one part of a watch. And the watch emerged from all these specialist little tiny firms working together. As an urban historian, I'm fascinated by the ways in which districts of networked creative industries are now occupying the same spaces that were once the site of networked small-scale industry based on specialist skills 250 years ago. Is it something in the cultural memory of the district? Probably not. More probably it's about the shape of the city and the character of its buildings, but it's interesting nonetheless. So maybe finally I've got there in this talk. I was asked to be provocative, but time and again I've failed over the years to be so. Here at last I've provoked an audience interested in the creative economy by telling them that they're not as new as they think.